Good evening, and thanks for joining us on a special edition of The Week in Review. I'm Nick Blumberg. Amanda Vinicky has the evening off. Tonight, we are ringing in the new year by focusing on the biggest stories of 2024, and boy, what a year it was. You can be forgiven for forgetting some of what we saw, so here's a look back at a few major moments to help jog your memory.
A happy warrior is still a warrior. You come for my people, you come through me.
Some individuals are having tantrums right now. It's time to grow up. People in Chicago don't have time for that.
From arguably the most powerful person at City Hall to inmate number 53698-424, former Alderman Ed Burke reported to federal prison today.
We have war zone numbers of people being wounded by gun violence right now. We are having a mass shooting on a regular basis.
Let's stop talking about 1968. This is 2024. The Chicago Police Department is proving that every single day.
I just miss my son. I'm hurt. I'm sick. I feel like I've been shot. My insides is burning up.
The prosecutors need to show how powerful he was in order to show that he was worth bribing for these companies to get legislation through that they needed.
What does the CEO see as the future of the Chicago Public Schools? And how does he help to create that vision without cuts, consolidations, or closures?
We have been transforming this district. It takes time. But today, Brandon, as I said, our schools have more resources than ever before. We have more teachers in our classrooms.
Bad news, Bears fans, or is it good news? Last week, the team fired their head coach, Matt Eberflus, marking the first time in franchise history a head coach has been sacked during the season.
And now to our year in review panel. Joining us are Craig Delamore with WBBM News Radio, Rima Amin with Chalk Beach Chicago, Maggie Hendricks with Yahoo Sports, and our very own Heather Sharone with WTTW News. Let's get right to it. Plenty for us to get to. Rima, let's start with some news from earlier this week. Outgoing CPS CEO Pedro Martinez, he won a temporary restraining order to stop the school board from modifying his duties during his final 6 months on the job. Do we know what Martinez was worried the board might try to do?
Yeah, so the day before the judge made that ruling, a handful of board members, you know, attended CTU negotiations for the first time, and I think for the first time since 2019. And so, you know, Martinez viewed that as an interference into normal bargaining processes. To be clear, Martinez himself hasn't been at negotiations either, but he sent his designees. And so that court ruling, you know, he welcomed it, and he said it was, you know, protective against board members, you know, unduly interfering in the bargaining process.
Yeah, and what have we heard from him? I mean, he gave a press conference after he was fired. What's he saying about being let go?
Yeah, I mean, well, about being let go, you know, it was that night that he was fired. It was the angriest I think I've ever seen him. And he said that, you know, all he wants to do is finish out his job for the next 6 months. You know, he's given 6 months notice, so he'll make it through the end of the school year. And he will continue to carry out his duties. And he pretty strongly said that he doesn't want the board or anybody else interfering in his job, and kind of told reporters, you know, if they try to do that, get to know my lawyer.
Yeah, sounds like he's not going to be shy about taking it to the courtroom if he needs to. I mean, you know, Heather, in the last week after this very unusual late night firing, what kind of reaction have we heard to Martinez's dismissal?
Well, I think it's a little bit of shock, especially coming sort of in this sort of weird holiday limbo week, and nobody's quite sure what this will mean for the next 6 months, right? Is there going to be a co-CEO? There were reports that Sean Hardin, the new board president, would sort of seek to sort of, you know, help run the district. Nobody's really clear on what that looks like. And of course, in just a couple of weeks, we're going to have a whole new school board for the third time in what, 3 months almost?
Yep.
And it's going to be 21 members. We're still waiting for Mayor Johnson to appoint his final person to that board. And it's going to be the first time that Chicagoans have elected anyone to represent them on a school board. So, and, you know, nobody really knows what this will mean for the CTU contract. Oh, and there's a principal's contract that's outstanding. Oh, and President-elect Donald Trump is promising to make Chicago ground zero for his mass deportation effort, which means that thousands of undocumented immigrants in Chicago schools could be at risk. There is a lot going on.
I mean, Craig Delamore, how much harder will this, firing make it for Mayor Brandon Johnson to shake off the allegations that he's just acting at the behest of the CTU, which had come out swinging against Martinez?
Well, I think he probably anticipated that he was going to. He's been getting that charge ever since he started running. So I think that part's baked into the cake already. The problem is that, as Heather says, Martinez is still going to be around because of his contract saying that he can't just be thrown out without that period of 6 months. The problem is going to be whether you see any real progress at the table. And it's also a perception problem because you've got the CTU, pretty much anything he says now is that he is slowing things down and the mayor is going to go along with that. But Martinez has set himself up as the person who is trying to keep the school board and the system from getting into even more debt and even more financial trouble. And that's not a good look for the administration. And some alder people are split over that.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, to the point about this sort of mid-year upheaval, you know, Maggie Hendricks, how difficult is this kind of leadership change for students and families, even if Martinez will serve out, you know, the rest of the school year?
It just feels like there's so much in flux in any kind of change in the middle of a school year. You know, I worked at schools and I also, obviously went to school. Any kind of change like that, whether it's your teacher going out for a maternity leave, it's a change at principal, anything, you're so used to routine in schools that when that's thrown off, even at the highest levels, that's going to just muck everything up.
Yeah. Well, we've got more education news that we will be coming back to. But turning to some of the big stories in the city, certainly one of the biggest one was a very contentious and public budgeting process, perhaps the most public in recent memory. Heather Sharone, you know, the city finally has a spending plan. Did the mayor's relationship with the council take damage, especially with his progressive allies?
It did, because, Craig has covered even more budgets than I have. It's very rare to hear a mayoral ally during sort of the final debate over the budget to sort of tick off a list of things that the mayor did wrong. And not just one co-chair of the Progressive Caucus did that, but two co-chairs of the Progressive Caucus did this. And another member of the Progressive Caucus, Alderman Matt Martin, voted no without saying even a word, which I think is indicative of how badly, you know, he damaged his relationship with those who wanted to support him. People like Alderman Anthony Beal and Alderman Ray Lopez, they were never going to vote for this budget. Even if it included unicorns and puppies for every Chicagoan. But the fact that he had trouble sort of crafting a budget that his progressive allies could get on board with, I think means that he has a lot of work to do in the coming months to repair those relationships.
And I think it's another issue of perception. This, in some ways, was not as unusual a budget process as it seems, but what happened in past budgets is that a lot of this hassling happened in the background, and frankly, more alder people were involved. A lot of people felt left out. When you get someone, a staunch ally like Maria Haddon, on the north side, who was always a yes vote,
right,
saying, but this, we were not listened to, we could have prevented some of the hassles that, you know, starting with a $300 million property tax increase and saying, we need this, and ending up with no property tax increase, it undermines your position. It might have been the way it was going to end up. But all of this fighting happened in public.
Right. I mean, can you recall a time where there has been something like that? I mean, it certainly dragged things on for much longer, and it seems to have made the process that much more difficult.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything where it happened openly like this. And maybe there's something positive in having it happen openly, But if people aren't used to it, it looks like chaos. And in some cases, it was chaos.
Well, you know, speaking of some other political news, I know last month feels like about a million years ago, but we did have an election just recently. You know, Craig, after an incredibly tight race, voters returned former President Trump to office. Illinois still deep blue, but he, you know, the GOP picked up some support, particularly in the Chicago area. Is that a hopeful sign for Republicans?
That is definitely a hopeful sign for Republicans, and probably a lot to make Democrats very nervous. Because even though Chicago went for Harris, there were a lot more votes for Trump than we have seen in the past, and a lot more people vocally open about it, where it was very whispered before.
Yeah, well, now that, you know, the Trump incoming administration is laying out its priorities, Heather, we've heard Borders Are, Tom Homan say, expect Chicago to be, you know, ground zero for mass deportations. What are you going to be watching for?
Well, I think the real issue that I will be looking at is whether President Trump, once he takes office, rescinds sort of a prohibition on immigration and customs enforcement going into places like churches and schools and those sort of places that had been deemed sanctuaries before. Chicago has a long history with the sanctuary movement to protect undocumented immigrants. I think if those protections go away, it will be a signal that he means to make good on his promise to conduct the largest deportation effort in American history. And that means that you will see, I think, the alarm ratchet up very significantly in neighborhoods like Pilsen and Little Village. And I think that there will be increasing pressure on Governor Pritzker and Mayor Johnson to take action to protect those who could find themselves in the crosshairs of ICE.
Well, and, you know, Rima, to Heather's point about schools, there's a significant portion of, you know, the CPS population, students and families that could be affected by this. You know, is there anything the district can do to prepare?
Yeah, so the district, I believe it was last month, passed it, you know, the Board of Education passed a resolution kind of recommitting itself to protecting students of all, immigration backgrounds and kind of reaffirming, you know, we're not going to let federal, immigration enforcement agents just into schools. Pretty boilerplate language you kind of see. I think the district has conveyed that they're very committed to protecting students who are undocumented and of varying immigration statuses. I think it's something that we really do need to pay attention to. I mean, if you're removing that protection at a federal level, what kind of local protection, you know, exists? I think it's a really important question. And I also think that just like in 2016, it kind of threatens to send this chilling effect across, like, different immigrant families and populations from, you know, turning in certain paperwork for school or, like, really talking about their background really at all.
Yeah, Maggie, we've heard sometimes these big promises, these big campaign promises from Trump. Certainly mass deportations was a centerpiece of this campaign. Do you expect he is going to try and fulfill that?
Yeah, I think the terrifying thing is that in 2016, it was very clear he didn't know how to govern. He had to be taught. I remember the Obama people had to stay in for a little bit longer to make sure that the transition even happened. This time they do know how to govern, and they are planning on the very first day to start coming after people who live here, who work here, who contribute to the city every day. And it's terrifying to think that they could even go into schools and churches.
Yeah, and I think look for a real court fight, maybe going to the Supreme Court, if Trump goes through with his threat that if they are deporting parents and they have children who were born in the U.S. who are citizens, that if they won't, that the whole family might have to go.
Right.
That will be a constitutional struggle. And I think we're going to have to see how the court handles it and how Trump handles it if he is, in fact, going to try and press that case.
Well, another big local election in addition to the first ever school board elections. After a pretty hard-fought primary, the new Cook County State's Attorney, Eileen O'Neill Burke, cruised to victory last month. Heather, how do we expect her tenure to differ from her predecessor, Kim Fox?
Well, we're already starting to see a pretty significant difference. We've seen a significantly greater number of felony shoplifting cases filed under State's Attorney O'Neill Burke than it was under Kim Fox, and that was probably probably the largest policy difference between her and Kim Fox, who, of course, wasn't on the ballot. She didn't seek again. But, you know, Eileen O'Neill Burke made a big deal about how Kim Fox was not doing enough to sort of address shoplifting as sort of an entry-level crime. And that was sort of adding to sort of, you know, sort of a sense that, like, stores weren't safe and it was hurting retailers. So we've seen that already change. Whether we will see additional changes, I think we'll have to see. She's only been in office for less than a month.
Yeah, she made a lot of strong statements about making sure that when someone is charged with a gun crime, that the state's attorneys are going to go into court and say that person needs to be detained. And they are now making it a mandatory thing for the office. That sounds like a big change. It's not. Kim Fox was doing that. It just wasn't mandatory. So they are not all that dissimilar. But you're going to see more of a demonstration of strength in this administration.
All right. Well, it was a big year for corruption-related news in Chicago.
Really?
Parentheses derogatory. You know, the very long-anticipated corruption and racketeering trial of former Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan has been underway for the last couple months, few weeks to go, likely. The prosecution has rested. You know, Craig, what do you make of what we've heard so far?
I think what we have heard is pretty much what we have heard all along because of the news reporting that companies, political figures, anyone knew that they needed to please or to assuage Mike Madigan in order to get things done. The worrying thing is that now there is a Supreme Court decision that actually made a distinction between when payment or when a benefit is given. So if it's before you take action, it's a bribe. But if it's after, it's a gratuity. Mm-hmm. And gratuities are not necessarily against the law. That's a reason. That's something that's going to, we're going to have to see how that plays out. But we can, obviously, Mike Madigan was the power in Springfield. The question was everything that happened illegal?
I think that is something that the prosecutors are probably pretty worried about, that Supreme Court ruling. I mean, you know, he was high-profile political leader, long tenure. News junkies and political watchers, I think, care a lot about this case. Rima, how much do you think the general public is paying attention?
That's a great question. I think the general public, you know, associates corruption with Chicago. We have a host of, you know, elected officials who have gone through the court system here. But you know, if I ask my family, like, you know who Ed Burke is, you know who Mike Madigan is, do you know that they're facing major trials this year? And people are not totally aware. So I found that pretty interesting, but I don't know.
No, I mean, and speaking of Ed Burke, you know, he finally started serving his sentence earlier this year. You know, Heather Sherrone, does this feel like the end of an era to see him behind bars?
Oh, certainly. You know, I think what is the Ed Burke case and the Michael Madigan case are very similar in that it was all of these sort of indirect sort of benefits. Hire my law firm, you know, make sure that you give an interview to the daughter of my good friend, that sort of thing. What I think was my takeaway from the Ed Burke case was that it was just so routine and nobody blew the whistle. Nobody sort of said, hey, this isn't right. I shouldn't have to hire your law firm to get a permit or to get a fee increase or whatever I need from my city hall. I think that the fundamental question is the culture, right? Mm-hmm. For so long, Chicagoans, and I am a long time, you know, born and raised here, is that we sort of accept that level of graft. And I think on some level, you get the government that you accept. And for so long, Chicagoans have sort of said, well, yeah, but, you know, was it really hurting? And I think the question that the prosecutors in both the Ed Burke case and now in the Michael Madigan case, they had to sort of prove to the jury that everybody suffers if it's not a playing field when you go to City Hall or down to Springfield.
All right. Well, turning briefly to some news in policing, you know, Heather, the CPD largely praised for its handling of protests around the DNC, not universally, but one area where they are falling short is compliance with the consent decree aimed at reforming the department. Why are things going so slowly?
Well, it is a complicated agreement, and Police Superintendent Larry Snelling and Mayor Brandi Johnson would be the first people to tell you that. But this agreement will turn six in early March, and the CPD has only complied with 9% of it fully. And we are starting to hear the federal judge get a little bit frustrated. And, you know, it can seem technical and confusing, but fundamentally, the Chicago Police Department was found to routinely violate the civil rights of Black and Latino Chicagoans. And this agreement is designed to make them stop doing that. And there's no evidence that they have stopped doing that to the satisfaction of the federal court. And the question is will that effort ramp up in the new year, or will it continue to sort of halt along, costing the city hundreds of millions of dollars every year? The budget for next year is more than $200 million, a figure I think that should make people's eyes pop a little bit, because, of course, they sort of fought over a $300 million property tax. Yeah. And it tells you just how serious these issues are and how complicated it is.
Yeah, and indeed, the mayor's original budget cut funding for the people who are responsible for monitoring and complying with the consent decree. That has now been pulled back after a lot of squawking from the monitor herself, the judge, and the Illinois Attorney General.
Yeah. All right, well, I want to get back to some education news before we run out of time. We mentioned the new hybrid elected appointed school board will soon be sworn in. Rima, what's its makeup going to be like?
Yeah, so it's going to be 21 people. 11 of them will be appointed by the mayor. He's appointed 10 so far, so we're waiting on that last appointment. And then there are 10 elected people. Three of them are candidates who are backed by the Chicago Teachers Union, which, of course, helped catapult Mayor Brandon Johnson into office. Another three were backed by school choice pro-charter school groups. And then there was one more person who was backed by the Chicago Teachers Union. He was uncontested. And then the final three were kind of independent of both of those groups. So honestly, like, as politically speaking, pretty diverse group of electeds.
All right. Well, before we run out of time for real, we got sports to talk about.
A little bit.
It wasn't a banner year, Maggie, but we did have a bright spot in the form of Angel Reese. What kind of an impact has she had?
It was so fun seeing Angel Reese come into Chicago and really adopt Chicago as her own, while also really kicking butt on the basketball court. You know, this guy didn't do as well as I think that we all would have hoped, but at the same time, Angel Reese just brought in crowds and brought in excitement and brought in hope for the future, which I think is the main thing that we need to get excited about in Chicago, because there's not much else.
Well, and between the Olympics and the WNBA, you know, it really feels like women's basketball is finally getting the shine that it deserves. I mean, is that fair to say?
Absolutely. The ratings, the attendance, this has been on an upward trajectory for the past 5 or 6 years, but this is the year that it really took a jump. And my biggest example of that was when I was in line at the Portillo's in Skokie, and I heard two guys talking about Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese behind me, and I thought that was the best sign.
That's a good, yes, if that's not taking the temperature, I don't know what is. Okay, let's talk about the bad stuff. Mm-hmm. Not a great year for local coaches. Blackhawks and Sky parted ways with theirs. Sox skipper Pedro Grifol and Bears coach Matt Eberflus both canned mid-season, first time the Bears have ever done that. Do we think it's the coaches that are to blame for the poor records, or is it the organizations?
It's the organizations.
great. We're done.
When you continue to lose, when you continue to not make the choices that are going to strengthen a team, when you continue to be decades behind the rest of the leagues, you can't really look at individual people anymore. You have to look at how the organization is, particularly in the Sox and the Bears. So,
well, and both of those organizations also hoping for public funding for new stadiums. And election officials are saying, no dice, no chance that's going to change.
No, I do not see that. I don't care how many cruises Jerry Reinsdorf takes people on. They are not going to change that. And I feel like Governor Pritzker would, like, stand in front of a bulldozer before he would let that happen. So
Yeah, there's not a lot of sentiment in Springfield, even for sports fans. I mean, you know, at least one of the leadership people is a former football player.
Yeah.
And says no.
Yeah.
So
we've finally learned across the country to not get duped. Yeah. Let's keep going with that.
Well, nobody is getting duped by this panel. You are all stars. We are out of time. So our thanks to Craig Delamore, Rima Amin, Maggie Hendricks, and Heather Sharon. We'll be back to wrap things up right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family. The Polk Brothers Foundation. Additional support is provided by
And that's our show for tonight. Be sure to check out our website for all the latest from WTTW News, including information on 5 new Illinois laws to know in the new year. Now for the Week in Review, I'm Nick Blumberg. Thank you for joining us tonight and throughout the year. Happy holidays, stay healthy and safe, and have a good night. All right, burning question. Any particular New Year's Eve, New Year's Day traditions you'll be observing this next week?
You've got to eat black eyed peas.
Yes.
Right?
There you
obviously.
Go. Collard greens. Yeah. Yes. We're having that.
My husband and I always make a really nice dinner and then are asleep by 9 on New Year's Eve.
Love
and
that.
And
that's
I'm
ideal,
definitely
yeah.
going for that again. But of course, we also live in Uptown, so who knows what noises we're
going
to hear.
You may have the fireworks going off. I'm familiar.
Fireworks would be the best scenario. I'm glad it'd be fireworks, so.
Yeah.
I'm going out to a nice dinner with a friend. No real traditions. Just try to, beat traffic, I guess.
Exactly.
That's the best
Avoid the crowds.
Yes.
Don't go out. Yeah. No, I think, a good movie on New Year's Day, that something comfort food, that sets the tone for the coming year,
We're sitting on the couch channel surfing to see, all right, that doesn't look interesting, that does.
Yeah.
Ooh, CNN looks good for 15 minutes.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that is proud to give back to its community in Chicago and beyond.